I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold Blooded, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern. Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one case, but almost a dozen. Listen to Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And you're here. Thanks for choosing the iHeartRadio and Coast to Coast AM Paranormal Podcast Network. Your quest for podcasts of the paranormal, supernatural, and the unexplained ends here. We invite you to enjoy all our shows we have on this network. And right now, let's start with Shades of the Afterlife with Sandra Champlain.
Welcome to our podcast. Please be aware the thoughts and opinions expressed by the host are their thoughts and opinions only and do not reflect those of iHeartMedia, iHeartRadio, Coast to Coast AM, employees of Premier Networks, or their sponsors and associates. We would like to encourage you to do your own research and discover the subject matter for yourself. Hi, I'm Sandra Champlain. For almost 25 years, I've been on a journey to prove the existence of life after death. On each episode, we'll discuss the reasons we now know that our loved ones have survived physical death. And so will we. Welcome to Shades of the Afterlife. Did you know that many people believe that it was back in 1848 with the raps and taps on the walls from the Fox sisters in Hydesville, New York, started the birth of the spiritualism movement? That is, people believing that they can communicate with the dead. From the Fox sisters, there was a big movement of people sitting in home circles, followed by physical mediumship, trance mediumship, and then after the wartime became what we have now as evidential mediums. And those are the mediums that you think of when you see somebody for a private sitting. However, 100 years before that, there was actually a guy who studied the afterlife for over 30 years and wrote many books on it. His name was Emanuel Swedenborg, who was born in 1688 and died in 1772. And many years ago, when I was on my investigation for just more evidence of the afterlife, well, I still am actually, I found a website called Swedenborg.com and also a YouTube channel called Off the Left Eye. There's a young man named Curtis Childs who hosts regular shows about Swedenborg, his philosophy, and much of it deals with the afterlife. So I'd like to share with you a conversation I had with Curtis. He's similar to me, the fact that we just want to share what we've learned to help others have the best lives possible. Ultimately, if we can end and help people who are suffering, that's what we want to do. So on this episode, you'll hear from Curtis. You'll learn about Swedenborg, his personal truths on the afterlife, his thoughts of angels and the loved ones we'll see, and ultimately, what Swedenborg says is the purpose of life. So, Curtis, take it away. Tell us about Emanuel Swedenborg.
You can't escape life after death if you're going to start reading Swedenborg. That was his claim to fame. His most popular book was called Heaven and Hell, which is this a tour of the afterlife, if you will. That was actually the book he wrote to try to get people interested in his other books, because he goes into all this complex background information about everything that people were not really willing to slog through. And everyone was asking him about, tell me about the afterlife. So he wrote that book to kind of get people interested. And I think that as far as who Swedenborg is, if he hadn't started writing these books about his experiences with life after death and everything else, we would all know who he is, because he was a scientific genius. He was at the head of many fields of science. He was kind of the leading man in Sweden, who was a world power at the time. He was figuring out how anatomy worked. He was figuring out how to make mining more effective. He wrote this thing called the Principia, which covered all the major topics of his day. He did metallurgy. He did like everything. He was a Renaissance man just in the period around there. But he was on a path to be, I think, you know, you'd learn about him in history. You learn about, he might not be as influential as Newton, but you'd have right. him there, you know. Yep. However, when he was in his mid-50s, he was looking for the seat of the soul. You know, he was studying anatomy. Back then, it was widely believed that there is a soul. You know, now it sort of is, but there's kind of this schism between science and spirituality. But he was thinking, well, I should be able to find a soul if I look in anatomy, if I right. study the brain enough. But he wasn't finding it. And his quest was sort of pulling him there, and he was kind of coming to a dead end. You know, where can I find this thing? And his dreams at that point began to get more vivid. And he actually catalogs this in what could be one of the first instances of dream analysis ever recorded. He has this thing that's published now as Journal of Dreams by Swedenborg, where he not only wrote down his dreams, but sort of psychoanalyzed them. Mm-hmm. And this was before there was such a thing. You know, this was before Freud or anything like that. But he would write his dream and then write what he thought it meant. And as those progressed, they became more and more vivid and lucid, and eventually spilled over into this waking spiritual out-of-body experiences, which we would now call near-death experiences or out-of-body experiences or spiritually transformative experiences. It became something more than a dream, and you can actually see him make that progression. So he had this complete change in the direction of his life. His spiritual experiences became the primary thing he wrote about all the way up until his death. He did sprinkle in a few more scientific things here and there, but it was the main thrust of everything was about. He had this mission that he felt like he had been given to write this stuff down, give people this information. And he felt, and looking back retrospectively, he said that his entire scientific career had just been preparing him for this, so that he could go into the afterlife, the nature of God, the nature of the soul, with the mind of a scientist, so he could meticulously document it. And what he had was, he was able to basically have near-death experiences at will for 30 years continuously.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, that he was lucidly in contact with the spiritual world. It didn't matter. Even if he was getting his coffee and writing in the morning, there he would hear what spirits around him were saying. He could travel in the spirit to see all the different realms of the afterlife. He could meditate on things, and that would so he was constantly plugged into that. He could be at a party with people in this earth, but at the same time be aware of what the spirits around him thought of that party. So he was plugged into that degree, and that's one of the things that makes him remarkable, is he was so connected and so lucid. He could say, I want to go see this thing, and he could go see it. And he had it continuously for three decades or more. And he wrote 27 volumes about it. So this could be the most documentation about spiritual experiences that any one person has ever had. And not only that, like, imagine you visited the United States from a foreign country, mm-hmm. and you just went there, and you know, you showed yourself around. You know, that's one level of experiencing. But imagine instead if you were some special envoy, and the U.S. government, all the major institutions, corporations, everybody gave you like backstage passes to see how their operation worked. You got the total tour of everything from the people who knew. That's sort of what he got of the afterlife, because he was given all this access to see not just I saw a building and there was people in it, but he learned sort of the laws governing the spiritual world. He was told, he got to visit these groups of people, these groups of spirits that were hard to get to. He had this incredible access, he said, because then it was given to him so that he could relay this stuff so that it could become common knowledge with all of us who can read his books. And as you said, a lot of the stuff that he wrote was way ahead of his time in that it feels current now. It feels like it lines very much up with modern spiritual or near-death experiences. At the time, it was so out there that he was put on trial for heresy and almost kicked out of his country, all this kind of stuff, because he was saying these things that you just didn't say back in theocratic Christian Europe. But a lot of things now are that he was saying back then, like, you know, all paths can lead you to heaven. A lot of people say that now, but not so many back then. But he was prescient in that way.
Curtis, what are some of Swedenborg's core beliefs?
The first thing I would say is don't believe everything you think.
that's good.
That's not necessarily about what heaven is like.
No.
But that's about what's in between us and heaven. Meaning one of the things that he learned is we are always being influenced by the other side. He talks about the spiritual world. Some people think about it like it's some sort of ethereal thing that's far away. Like he compares it to a bird flying way off in the air that you can kind of see, you know. Uh-huh. Okay, there's a spiritual world, it's out there, whatever it is. He says, no, actually, the spiritual world is like a beautiful bird of paradise that's flying so close to your face that the tips of its feathers on its wings are touching your eyelash. You know, it's so close to you. It's always interacting. And he says that we are in a continuum with the afterlife. Our thoughts and feelings are being influenced by the greater whole of humanity. Just like you can see, just go on your Facebook feed and look for somebody who's saying something political right now.
Right.
If it's something you don't like, chances are you're going to say, oh, well, they just heard that on channel X, and that's why they're saying. We acknowledge that people are influenced by things. And Swedenborg is saying we get an influence in the mind in the same way. And to me, hearing that after having just dealt with this deluge of negative thoughts and feelings for so long, oh, that makes sense. I don't have to believe in this stuff just because I hear it in my mind. You know, that sort of critical thinking about it, to me, that's been the concept that I've most been able to use. And that's just giving you a very simplified version of it. The other things, the heaven that he talks about is a state of mind. And really, that gives me a compass to sort of gauge where do I want to go? Because we sit here, we have life. What am I trying to accomplish? What am I trying to do? You know, how do I play this game? What are the rules? Are you trying to win? What is life? And he gives you this picture of the heavenly mindset, which is probably people have heard parts of it from other traditions, but it's essentially it's loving doing useful things for other people. Mm-hmm. So, for example, if you wrote that book that you wrote to try to get other people to learn that, hey, we're not going to just blink out at the end of our life. There is something there. You're turning something into something that helps people. And the joy that you feel in that and the joy that I feel when I think about somebody finding my videos and it lifting up their life, that's heaven. That is the mindset of heaven, that the joy in serving some kind of use for another person, that joy is going to last. If I'm doing my channel, if I'm sitting there and I'm excited, like, look how many subscribers I have. That makes me so cool. That's not a sustainable joy.
We're going to head into our first break. And while you're listening to those commercials, why don't you head over to Coast to Coast AM and click on events. You can see where the great George Norrie is going to be coming up, maybe to a town near you. George Norrie and Tom Danheiser from Coast to Coast AM created Shades of the Afterlife, so I'm always grateful to share where they will be. You're listening to Shades of the Afterlife on the iHeartRadio and Coast to Coast AM Paranormal Podcast Network.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Take a minute to check your social battery. How's it doing? Does the thought of social events make you feel excited or exhausted? It's easy for people to ignore their social batteries and spread themselves thin, especially at this time of year, when gatherings are picking up again after the winter. But it's important to find the right amount of socializing for you and still give yourself the time to recharge. Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. And when you're feeling worn out from socializing, therapy can help give you the tools you need to take care of yourself and recharge. Because a full battery is the key to a full life. And BetterHelp offers affordable online therapy on a schedule that works for you. Connect with a licensed therapist by text, phone, or video call. Start the process in minutes and switch therapists anytime. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/shades today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/shades.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold-Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern.
It's just a shame, you know, that they took him from us.
Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, knocking on doors, uncovering new evidence, including the DNA of a potential killer.
My name is Danny Smith. I'm a detective with Miramar Police Department. This is Scott Weinberger. We're actually reopening an old case, and your name came up.
Untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one murder, but almost a dozen.
I thought they were going to kill me, so I kept my mouth shut and I didn't say anything. All these years, I didn't say anything.
Listen to Cold-Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We started talking about this incident. Drugs and officials cover up. You couldn't believe it.
From iHeart Podcasts.
It's like the police knew who he was before they got here.
A story about money, power, and corruption.
The medical school dean at USC was leading a secret double life.
He's breathing right now?
Yes, he's absolutely breathing. I'm a doctor, actually.
There's no way that that guy's a doctor.
I'm Paul Pringle, and I'm an investigative reporter for the LA Times. This is the story of an investigation that starts in a hotel room in Pasadena, California, and reaches all the way to the top of two of the most powerful institutions in the city of Los Angeles.
When people fall in line, they fall in line.
Looking back, I realized, everyone knew.
This is Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption.
We're always going to have predators. It's the good people who stand by and do nothing that allow them to flourish.
Listen to Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Shades of the Afterlife. I'm Sandra Champlain, and we are with Curtis Childs from Off the Left Eye YouTube channel, with now almost 140,000 subscribers. Curtis was just saying that to get sustainable happiness, you can't be directed from ego, like, oh, look at how many subscribers I have. Let's let him continue.
But what that number represents is a bunch of people who hopefully are having a positive impact in their life. The thing that I should be excited about is happiness in those people and answers and relief, the kind of relief that I got happening for them. That's heaven. So it just lets me know, okay, great. That's what I can cultivate. That's what I can work toward. Not that I should never feel good about myself for doing a good job on things, but don't have that be your primary goal in life. The primary goal is help the human race. Think about that, though, as a compass, because the best Curtis that Curtis can be is serving people in the way that I can. If I didn't know that, you can easily get buffeted around inside your mind and inside your feelings. Oh, do I need to be more successful here? Do I need to be expressing myself more here? Is there something it creates this nervousness about what do I need to do to validate myself? But if you just know the point is serve others in that way, to me, it's relaxing. Okay. That's the direction. Not that it lays out every step of that, but it gives me a path. And so that's just one concept. There are so many others in Swedenborg. His picture of God is just beautiful. It's large and complex, but very simple. Love that God has, love to the whole human race. Like when I'm going to help people, that's that divine love coming through. The more that each of us individually taps into that, the more that we all act together in concert. He has this idea. Have you heard of, did you ever see an episode on The Grand Human?
No.
So this is a concept that he has. He talked about in the afterlife, the place he calls heaven, which heaven is just made up of people who are more and more having this state of mind of love to the human race. He says that we're both wearing the shape of heaven, meaning the human body is this perfect model of cooperation, interdependence, and mutual love. If you think about all the different parts of the body, they get everything they need from the whole and they give everything they have to the whole. You think about, it's true on the larger levels of, let's talk about your heart. It is pumping blood out to the whole body, but also it's receiving protection from the rib cage. It is receiving oxygen from the lungs. It's the immune system is protecting it. It is being loved and it is loving, you know, and you see this even down to the cellular level. You have individual cells that are working to make proteins. They are dependent on the red blood cells bringing them oxygen. He says that the human body is actually the perfect image of the way that the entire human race can work together. And like you were saying, you know, you find out in whatever way you can help, you know, there's all these different specialized parts. The teeth do something that, you know, that the liver can't do. And then the eyeball does something that the ear can't do. Right. And that each of us, he actually says that in heaven, you go to, you know, it's not like heaven is actually in the shape of a person, but people who have an ability to understand things, an ability to learn, they're kind of like the eyes of humanity. So you go there and you're in a community serving to gather information for the rest of humanity. He talks about this tight community that's as mutually interdependent and loving as the human body, and that from physical things, we can see pictures of spiritual things. And with Swedenborg, he shows how the entire physical world is showing you what these deeper realities are like. You just have to know how to speak the language. And the example of the human body is just one out of many, many, many examples.
That's really great, Curtis. Can we talk a little bit about the mind? Because we all have a negative mind that pops up more often than we want to. You know, I have people in my book do an exercise, write down everything you think about yourself. And so often there's a lot of negative. And then I say, what if you were asking the five people closest to you, what would they say about you? And you know what? It would be filled with positive things. So we aren't really who we think we are. We're really as other people say that we are.
Isn't that an interesting phenomenon that we're all mean to ourselves? Like, wait a second, step, like, that doesn't make any sense. I did a video that was called Head Bullies, which is a speech that I gave once. And because if you took that list you were talking about, if you had a person who was saying those things to you, that would be a restraining order. I mean, that is not okay.
That would be a restraining order.
We do not allow that.
That's funny,
If I was saying that to somebody, they should be exiting me from their life as fast as possible, you know?
Yeah.
However, when we say it to ourselves, we just think, oh, that's true. It must be true because I'm saying it, you know? But no, it's not. That treat those voices in the same way that you'd really treat a bully, which means if somebody's bullying you, you don't want to say, I'm going to listen. I'm going to take your advice to heart on everything you say, because you know all they're trying to do is get at you. It's for the same reason that bullies bully. It's for power, and it doesn't have your own interest in mind. So in that same way, yeah, I take everything all that negative stuff I get. I try to just say, like, you're not a trustworthy source, my own mind, on that kind of stuff. That you got to have these balances, like you're talking about, get other people to talk to you. That's a great technique.
Yeah, and that untrustworthy source, we also buy into that, you know, life after death can't be real, or this is all there is. And meanwhile, if we can stop and we can look at, like, internet technology or our cell phones that are picking up things from God knows where the cloud is, you know, or even looking at planet Earth and thinking, you know, millions of years ago, it was just this rock, right? And now out of it, we have houses and books and computers and technology. And like, we're actually living in a miracle, but our minds can say, no, we're not.
And they can shrink it down so incredibly to like, you have this amazing world, is amazing technology, amazing people, but your life can just be reduced to, I can't believe that person said that thing about me.
Oh, exactly.
You know, like that's what it comes down to. I remember going to see this exhibit about the human body and just being floored by the amazing amount of complexity and beauty in it. But yet you can see someone just be like, that guy looks funny, you know, and that's like your whole assessment. But if you understood the processes that are going, that is the most amazing thing you could look at, you know? So I think that it's funny how we can just sort of debase the thing that, but really there's all this behind it. And it's cool that you mentioned, internet technology, cell phone technology. We did a show called How the Spiritual World is Like the Internet as We Find It Now, which obviously was something that there's nothing comparable to that on the planet in the mid 1700s. But he talks about, time and space being obsolete in the spiritual world, that thinking of anyone, you can immediately be present with them. There's no distance issue there. And the time, there's not really time. There's just sort of states of mind. And here we are. You and I are far, far away from each other, but yet we're talking over the internet like we're face to face, and we're recording this show. But, you know, anybody from now on can just listen to it as if it was happening in the present moment. So you sort of have the physical world starting to resemble the spiritual world. And it goes into more detail than that. Swedenborg says that in the spiritual world, you can know what somebody is like just on approaching them. It's like more of an honest world, you know, and, you know, it's not a perfect system. But with the web, if I get a call on my phone that I don't recognize, I can immediately look up that number and see, oh, other people are saying this is spam. Don't answer this.
Yeah, it's true.
You know, that you can kind of vet things. And with a person, you go try to look at their Facebook profile. You can like learn about them instantly. And also people gather in their own communities. You have all these neat sort of web communities that are based around really specific interests, but people gather and they talk about those. Even my YouTube channel, and this is people who are interested in a particular take on spirituality that Swedenborg offers. We can all gather there. And Swedenborg says in community, in the spiritual world, it's your interest. It's what you love that pulls you together. So I just see that the more technology evolves, the more it begins to resemble this thing he was describing seeing, you know, a couple centuries ago. So there again, the physical world is starting to reflect the spiritual world more and more.
Wow. I just got this visual of driving down the road and without your show, uh-huh. You're in the back seat. Someone else is doing the driving and they're going wherever they want to go. And they're telling you stories that you probably don't want to hear. And they're being the bully and all that mm-hmm. stuff. And what you provide, Curtis, and the Swedenborg Foundation is you get to be in the driver's seat and you get to just be like, no, this is where I'm going to go. And this is what I want to find out about. And it's such a wonderful way to really grow spiritually. Getting into the driver's seat, watching and learning and what you provide for people, I think you can really have like a rapid growth spurt into just another quality of life that was previously unimaginable. So
yes. Well, it's cool to hear you say that because that's what I'm hoping it can provide. And that's what Swedenborg has provided for me for sure. And that not only does it put you in the driver's seat, but tells me what roads are good to drive on, where the destination is, you know, because if I don't have a clear sense of where to go, it's hard for me to get in there and drive. But that's a very good metaphor that it does make me feel like rather than just being driven everywhere by the thoughts in the mind, I can instead say, I know what's actually going on. So if you're saying something counter to that, I know I don't have to listen to you, which that has been such a phenomenal tool for me in growth and in life.
Mm-hmm. I totally agree. And I know for myself and what I share about as I really think where we are at this moment right now is what's important. Our mind can also say what we could have and should have done differently and given us all this guilt, right? And that's not very empowering in life. So instead of that, all roads led us to exactly where we are today, talking today, doing what we are today. And we've got the power of the unseen world around us, fueling us. In fact, when we get back from the break, Curtis, I want to hear a little bit about what Swedenborg says about our loved ones and if we have guides. I think you mentioned earlier angels. So let's go to our break and then we will continue our conversation. You're listening to Shades of the Afterlife on the iHeartRadio and Coast to Coast AM Paranormal Podcast Network.
Oh,
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern.
It's just a shame, you know, that they took him from us.
Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, knocking on doors, uncovering new evidence, including the DNA of a potential killer.
My name is Danny Smith. I'm a detective with Miramar Police Department. This is Scott Weinberger. We're actually reopening an old case, and your name came up.
Untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one murder, but almost a dozen.
I thought they were going to kill me, so I kept my mouth shut, and I didn't say anything. All these years, I didn't say anything.
Listen to Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We started talking about this incident. Drugs and officials cover up. You couldn't believe it.
From iHeart Podcasts.
It's like the police knew who he was before they got here.
A story about money, power, and corruption.
The medical school dean at USC was leading a secret double life.
He's breathing right now? Yes, he's absolutely breathing. I'm a doctor, actually.
There's no way that that guy's a doctor.
I'm Paul Pringle, and I'm an investigative reporter for the LA Times. This is the story of an investigation that starts in a hotel room in Pasadena, California, and reaches all the way to the top of two of the most powerful institutions in the city of Los Angeles.
When people fall in line, they fall in line.
Looking back, I realized, everyone knew.
This is Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption.
We're always going to have predators. It's the good people who stand by and do nothing that allow them to flourish.
Listen to Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Are you ready to fight back against crime? Hi guys, Nancy Grace here, host of podcast Crime Stories with Nancy Grace. I've dedicated my life to fighting crime and helping crime victims. For a decade, I prosecuted violent felonies, personally investigating, prosecuting, and covering literally thousands of cases. It's so easy to think it will never happen to me or my family, but that is simply not true. Every day on Crime Stories with Nancy Grace, we shine a light on unsolved homicides, heat up cold cases, and help find missing people, especially children. We speak with family members, investigators, CSI, reporters, and experts in every field. Every day is a mission. Every day is a chance to stop crime and keep one more person safe. Listen to Crime Stories with Nancy Grace on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.
Welcome back to Shades of the Afterlife. I'm Sandra Champlain, and we are with Emanuel Swedenborg expert, Curtis Childs. Curtis, can you talk, if Swedenborg talks about our deceased loved ones in the afterlife or angels or spirit guides?
Yes, he absolutely does. He gives descriptions, not as vivid. I mean, in modern near-death experiences, you'll get more vivid descriptions of reuniting with relatives. Mm-hmm. But I think that he just had so much he was covering. He does say, you know, in the spiritual world, seeing families reunited, seeing, siblings, spouses, parents and children, people being overjoyed, meeting each other again. So he would even have people that he knew while they were alive, then they would die and he would get to converse with them in spirit after that. So
that's good enough for me. Yeah.
And even, I mean, there's anecdotes, but well documented about, there was people who began to catch wind that he could see the spiritual world. So they wanted to test it. Could tell me something that my brother would know who died that nobody else did. And as the story goes, he was called into the court of this queen and he told her this thing that nobody else could have known. And you can look at his Wikipedia page. It's on there. But so he had these sorts of connections. So there's those, but then angels, he says, yes, always. There's actually always at least two angels with every person. There is two angels because one is associated with your thoughts and one is associated with your feelings.
Hmm.
because there are sort of two primary faculties in a human being, what he calls the understanding and the will, which also can be called the intellect and the volition, or volition and discernment, which I think almost breaks down neatly into thoughts and feelings. It's sort of like your purpose and how you get there. And he says that you have an angel with each part of you, and that through this angel is sort of your connection to heaven. So you can actually be in, as he describes it, it's complex, because there's those two that are almost like, they're like permanently with you and sort of allow you to live, because they're a channel for this life into you. He talks about communities in the afterlife, but he says our spirits are actually in communities right now in the afterlife. We have a spirit right now. We're in a community, and actually our community throughout the course of our life changes based on what we love, based on what we're turning our attention towards and focusing on. That we actually change spiritual locations as we grow to have different interests and progress spiritually. We go up into these different heavenly communities. He gives the interesting anecdote that if you're deep enough in meditation or something like that, uh-huh, you actually become visible in your spiritual community. Like the spirits there can see you and be like, who's that? You know, Swedenborg is full of little fascinating anecdotes like that. But what I'm saying is there's also, you could be surrounded by plenty of angels that are working with you and protecting with you in addition to your, you know, your two kind of buddy buddies. So any, you know, so there's this level of intimacy with heaven that I've rarely ever heard of, with angels actually being able to know sort of the details of the origins of our thoughts and our feelings, and why we're all these elements in our thoughts and feelings that we ourselves aren't even aware of. And they're gently trying to bend those towards good. They never force us to do something we're not willing to do, but they're always pulling for us. And Swedenborg says that an angel would gladly trade places with anyone if it meant they could come up and experience heaven. When we talk about the joy of helping other people, heaven consists entirely of that. So angels, people that are in heaven, their greatest joy is helping, and that includes helping us. So you have, Swedenborg talks about angels that protect people while they're sleeping and introduce good dreams. And he says that the angels are so excited to do that, that there's sort of a friendly competition between them, because, no, I want to do it. I want to do it because I really want this person to be happy. So there's that much pressing love coming out of them. And when he would say he would interact with angels, he pretty much loses his ability to describe it. He always just says it. They are pure love. There's nothing but love. It's beyond me to describe. He'll try, but I think you get that from people who have had near-death experiences, that they can try to put it into words.
But they can't.
Yeah.
So they can't.
He finds himself in the same boat.
Yeah. What does he say as far as the purpose of life?
From what I understand, we're in the second sort of womb right now. If you think of what's the point of being in the womb before we're born, it's to grow and develop, because you have to grow and develop in that particular environment. You know, the womb, you have, mm-hmm, the amniotic fluid, you're protected from the elements. You're given all the food you need. You're given the oxygen you need. You couldn't go through those stages out here in this world because you need that environment. And similarly, we are here in this world because we need this environment to grow and develop before we can go into the spiritual world. This level of existence has different conditions than are available there. For example, here you can kind of be duplicitous, or you can sort of think one thing but say another thing, or try to put up a front, you know,
yes,
to please, uh-huh, people.
Yep.
And actually, that actually is, it can be used negatively, but it's actually an important tool, because Swedenborg says in the spiritual world, you just are what you are. You don't really have impulse control. You don't really have a filter. And if we did that now, that would be a problem, you know, because we all have stuff to work on. We have a chance, because you can think one thing and feel a different thing. I can say, ooh, I'm really wanting to think something nasty about that person, say something nasty to them, behave dysfunctionally, but I'm actually going to not do it. You know, that we have the chance to kind of push back and learn in that way. And through that, we're forming our spirit. Those choices that we make in the face of things like suffering or negativity, that's forming our spirit. so that once, but at the end of life, the spirit that we've formed through the kinds of things we've chosen and loved in life, then that's fully developed and ready to be in the spiritual world, so that we are going through this life because we have to have these conditions to develop. But in regard to suffering in particular, Swedenborg says that nothing bad is allowed unless it in the end can be used for good. So, I mean, we have me, Curtis, talking about 18, 19, 20, I was going through this really hard stuff. Well, I can even see in retrospect that I learned so much. I'm more empathetic now. I'm deeper now. And that was what led me and continues to lead me to this craving for the truth and this search for the truth and this living the principles I find in Swedenborg and in other sources and then wanting to pass it on. If it wasn't for any of those hardships, I would never have that desire to do that. You know, so there, all the things in our lives that are tough are only allowed to the extent that in the end, even though there is suffering and that's real, I'm not trying to, you know, trivialize that, but thinking down the road, you know, if life is eternal, we're going to at some point be able to look back and say, okay, it was all worth it. I am who I am today because of all this. When people see the plan, they think, okay, it all makes sense. And that the idea is, even though it does not seem like that at all, we can have some confidence and some comfort in the idea that all this is bringing the best out of an imperfect situation, which is that we live in a world where people are free to either be nice or mean to each other and all the sort of residual suffering that comes out of that, you know? So, I mean, that's my like pithy attempt to answer that quickly. We've done several shows on the topic. That's
all good.
Like the main question, you know? But those are like sort of the beginning thoughts on the whole thing. And it's not like I always have that all figured out. If I'm in my house trying to get something ready and I like knock over a glass full of water or something, it's very hard for me in that moment to feel like everything has a purpose. Why that? Come on. Like, okay, I get it. You can learn, but why that? So I'm still learning, but I do believe that, you know, in my better states, that we are going to, I can see it with some things in my own life, things that at the time I really didn't like, but now I think, wow, I'm really lucky for the position I'm in now because of those things.
Yeah. My dad died and that was the thing for me, the most suffering and really tough time. Never in a million years would I've ever thought I'd be helping people through grief. Curtis, there's been people that haven't committed suicide because of my words and the shows and the book. And it's like, in the moment it was all happening, I would have never thought that my deepest, darkest despair would turn into something like this. But looking back, it's like it has. So as advice to somebody who may be going through some really tough times right now, in the moment, it's really hard to have the answers. But there is something called faith and trust that perhaps in the future you're going to make a profound difference for someone else or, you know, have a better life because of it.
Yeah. And I don't think we can ever be trying to take away people's pain entirely. But as you said, there is an element of comfort. I don't think we can eradicate suffering, but there can be less based on these principles like you're talking about.
Yeah. The human body is not an easy thing to live in. I mean, there's all kinds of chemical makeup and depression is real. And yeah, planet Earth is not always the happiest place to be.
No.
If we do believe in a much bigger picture, it can get you through even the darkest times. Curtis, do you have any favorite episodes? That's what I'm thinking to ask you now.
Oh, that we did on the...
Yeah.
I mean, the funny thing is, I really like our episodes that we did about the dark side of things.
Really?
Yes. And the reason that I do is because those are actually the ones that people come up to us and say that helped me more often than any other, because it's people that are, you just described all these problems with the world. People are doing really tough things to each other. And inside people's minds, they're being attacked in all these ways. And because Swedenborg saw sort of the root causes of all that stuff and describes it. And when you describe that to people, they can experience such a liberation from that. Like, oh, that's why this is happening and in me. And that, you know, that's how I can deal with it. You wouldn't think so. It's counterintuitive, but that can be some of the most comforting stuff to people.
Yeah, I completely get what you're saying. And people need to know that someone else has been there before and has lived through it before. We talk about grief a lot. And who would you rather have help comfort you through grief? Someone who's been there, someone who's had family feuds, someone who's lost loved ones, or someone who just says, yeah, get over it. You've had a month off for work. You should be fine by now. No. We want to hear from somebody who's been there before. So that totally makes sense. Well, we'll be back in just a moment with our last segment with Curtis Childs. You're listening to Shades of the Afterlife on the iHeartRadio and Coast to Coast AM Paranormal Podcast Network.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold-Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern.
It's just a shame, you know, that they took him from us.
Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, knocking on doors, uncovering new evidence, including the DNA of a potential killer.
My name is Danny Smith. I'm a detective with Miramar Police Department. This is Scott Weinberger. We're actually reopening an old case, and your name came up.
Untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one murder, but almost a dozen.
I thought they were going to kill me, so I kept my mouth shut, and I didn't say anything. All these years, I didn't say anything.
Listen to Cold-Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Started talking about this incident. Drugs and officials cover up. You couldn't believe it.
From iHeart Podcasts.
It's like the police knew who he was before they got here.
A story about money, power, and corruption.
The medical school dean at USC was leading a secret double life.
He's breathing right now? Yes, he's absolutely breathing. I'm a doctor, actually.
There's no way that guy's a doctor.
I'm Paul Pringle, and I'm an investigative reporter for the LA Times. This is the story of an investigation that starts in a hotel room in Pasadena, California, and reaches all the way to the top of two of the most powerful institutions in the city of Los Angeles.
When people fall in line, they fall in line.
Looking back, I realized, oh, everyone knew.
This is Fallen Angels, the story of California corruption.
We're always going to have predators. It's the good people who stand by and do nothing that allow them to flourish.
Listen to Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Are you ready to fight back against crime? Hi guys, Nancy Grace here, host of podcast Crime Stories with Nancy Grace. I've dedicated my life to fighting crime and helping crime victims. For a decade, I prosecuted violent felonies, personally investigating, prosecuting, and covering literally thousands of cases. It's so easy to think it will never happen to me or my family, but that is simply not true. Every day on Crime Stories with Nancy Grace, we shine a light on unsolved homicides, heat up cold cases, and help find missing people, especially children. We speak with family members, investigators, CSI, reporters, and experts in every field. Every day is a mission. Every day is a chance to stop crime and keep one more person safe. Listen to Crime Stories with Nancy Grace on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.
Welcome back to Shades of the Afterlife. I'm Sandra Champlain, and we are with Curtis Childs from Swedenborg.com, or go to YouTube and type in Off the Left Eye for some really, really great and powerful videos. Curtis, do you think just because we're spiritual people that life is a little easier for us?
There's a tendency that I want to point out that sometimes people think just because we have spiritual ideas or beliefs, we don't need to go through the process, the grief, things like right. that. Like, oh, don't you believe in life after death? That's not how it works. I mean, death is a really, really hard thing, and you need to give yourself space. When I was young, when I was like six, my sister died, and she was just like a year and a half older than me. Wow. And even now, you live with the residual effects of that. And it's not like just now I've got all this Swedenborg in my brain, so that doesn't affect me anymore. We are biological machines in these. We are emotional creatures. You can't just unthink how you're wired and just think your way out of all wounds. But there's certain amounts of, you know, like if you actually get a deep wound, you can't just command it to heal, but you can take care of it. You can clean it. You can you know, provide comforting medicine. And that's more the role that I see this stuff playing, rather than saying, yeah, okay, so now you don't need to grieve for your dad. No, the true wisdom there is realizing that you need to grieve as much as you need and in the way that you need. And your grief isn't necessarily going to look like anyone else's. The kinds of things that people learn only really by studying and going through it themselves.
Mm-hmm. That's the best kind of learning there is.
Absolutely. That's where all the stuff for the channel that we work on comes from, is trying to take these principles, apply them to life, see how does this work? Does this make sense? And then once I feel like I've got something that we can pass along, you know, we pass it along. And it's not just me working on the channel. We've got like a team of people that are doing graphics and writing, and the channel wouldn't be what it is without them. And they're all working for Swedenborg Foundation with me. So I just wanted to let people know that it's not just you.
Would you let them know that they do a great job?
Cause yes, I will.
I mean, it's so awesome. The graphics and the scripts and the questions and your guests. And it's like, oh my God. I mean, really phenomenal.
Yes.
Phenomenal
they are.
Stuff. What is the Swedenborg Foundation?
What is it?
Yeah.
It is a nonprofit organization that has been around. I don't even have it memorized. It's much more than 100 years that it's been an organization. It was originally just a translator and publisher of Swedenborg's books.
Okay.
So it existed, I think it was originally in New York State or maybe New York City, and it was called something else, but then it moved. Now it's headquartered in Westchester, Pennsylvania. And it would print Swedenborg's books and translate them. And that's all it did. But then, you know, in the 80s, there were people sitting around saying, you know, barely anyone's reading these books. How do we get them out to people? So that began kind of a new phase of Swedenborg Foundation, where they were trying to publish like collateral books, because when you come up upon Swedenborg's books, they're daunting. They can be a little bit intimidating if you don't happen to have a taste for 1750s philosophy.
Right.
They're long and they're strange. I mean, you open them up and you're going to see him talking about spirits and how they affect you and all this out of body stuff and mixing that in with Christian sounding stuff. And it's just like a lot of people, I would imagine, just opening it up and shutting it. You know, it was just like that. So it actually takes giving it some time to really find, oh, there is gold in here, you know. So Swedenborg Foundation thought, hey, that's a problem. So we're going to try to publish these simpler kind of books to get people into it. They dabbled in some other things. They did a little video back in the day. And then it was just a few years ago that I started working with Swedenborg Foundation. And this is part of sort of this new online push that we're doing now. And we have a couple of social media networks. We have our videos, we have our website. And the mission statement, though, is just to foster an affirmative, increasingly broad conversation around the ideas of Swedenborg. And it's the heart of it is people who have found Swedenborg, love it, and think it could do some good, and are just trying to get anybody to listen and stop and wait, give this a second chance, that there might be something that'll change your life in here.
You know, it's interesting, because when I first started my life after death research, long before my book, long before my dad died, I had downloaded some books. And when I had seen your videos, I'm like, Swedenborg, gosh, that sounds familiar. Mm-hmm. So I had downloaded all these free books on my Kindle. And even knowing that I was going to interview you today, I decided to like open one random one. And it was, to me, so heavy and so like, I think I'd rather just watch his videos. It's kind of...
Right.
what I did. Not that I won't give him a second chance.
That keeps us in business. You know, if he was easier to read, you might not need the videos in the first place.
No, but they're really great. Just great.
Thank you.
What else haven't I asked you that I really should that you might want to share? How about that?
Well, I want to say, you know, if you guys want to check them out for yourself.
Your words.
It's youtube.com/offtheleftEye. And that off the left eye comes from, actually, there was a spiritual experience Swedenborg had where he said that he was being shown what the dying process is like, just so that he could report on it. And he said that he was sort of being put through it, but yet a part of him was conscious so he could take notes, you know, or remember it and then write it. And he said that he was at first, you know, his soul was being awakened. And at first he was in this purely emotive place and he was in contact with heaven close to his heart, but he wasn't really thinking about anything. But then when he started to stir and began to start to wake up, there was these angels that came that gave him the use of his spiritual sight. And they did that. He said it seemed as if a covering was pulled off his left eye that gave him that sight. And there's all this kind of symbolism with left and right and eyes. And so that's what the channel is named after, is that experience.
Oh, that's neat. I was wondering what that was all about.
Yep. And people online are like, what is that? What is that? Is that Illuminati? What is that? What does that mean? But everything has a correspondence or symbolism. The left side is intellectual. The right side is volitional. Swedenborg actually anticipated the modern sort of science of the hemispheres of the brain through his spiritual discoveries. But our show is called Swedenborg in Life because you can look at any facet of life and understand it, in my opinion, better through Swedenborg's concepts. It's not just relegated to, we're just going to talk about what happens after we die, or we're just going to talk about theology or something. The way you look at everything, the way you look at people, the way you look at other life forms, the way you look at relationships, the way you look at events, it can all be upgraded by the way he describes it. And I'm just beginning learning what he's really talking about. You know, I get concepts. Suddenly I'll understand something like I didn't before, because I can read part of Swedenborg and come back and say, wait a second, I never read this before because I didn't get it. I was once giving a lecture about Swedenborg's view of the afterlife. So I was just going back over Heaven and Hell, which I had read before. And I was just feeling like, man, I don't feel like I've ever read any of this, because this is all striking me as new. Because with Swedenborg, I think you have a tendency sometimes to, I'm just going to jump over that because it seems complex, or I don't get what he's saying there. But every once in a while it clicks and like, ooh, that's alive. I get what he's talking. That's cool. Mm-hmm. You know, and that actually, I can use that today to change kind of my thought practice.
Wow. Curtis, you are a huge gift. You and your team. And cool. Your angels that are surrounding you.
Glad you still think so, even at the end of the interview.
Oh, you know, it just has me want to watch more. And for our listener right now, I'm bragging about Curtis, but he is the real deal. when I say these episodes are phenomenal. And Curtis, just from being a human being who's on a journey right now myself, the ups and downs and life can suck sometimes and it can be great other times. I want to just really thank you for taking the negativity, the depression, your past, and whatever still keeps coming up in your negative mind, and turning it into good and turning it into something that has made a difference in my life and will continue to. And then even in so many lives, people that you may never even meet. There's something, a picture I want to leave you with right now, Curtis, sure. And our listener. Many people that I have interviewed talk about this near-death experience. And one of the neatest things that they say, many of them say, is we have this life review when it's all over, and you go through your life and you see your impact on other people from other people's perspective. Well, many, Curtis, have said that after you see kind of the negative things, and nobody's judging you, you're just looking at your own life, but you get to see the impact of the positive difference you've made in people's life, and then the ripple effect. So just the image for you, Curtis, is that someday, you know, when you have your flash of your life, you get to see just the millions of souls that have their lives have been transformed, and the difference they got to make in their lives, all because of you taking the time, you and your team, to make this possible for us. So I want to thank you.
Thanks so much. That's very sweet of you. And we're going to keep doing it. I mean, we're not slowing down anytime soon. So hopefully that those ripples will go bigger and bigger.
They most definitely will. And let's all just remember, even the smallest little good deeds we do have that ripple effect. You never know how they impact another person. When you look at another set of eyes, they have all the fear, all the baggage, all the worries, all those things that you have. So treat them with kindness. Just a couple of last-minute announcements. Don't forget, our home base is WeDon'tDie.com. And if you go to the store page and scroll down, use coupon code FREE for a copy of my audiobook. Chapter 10 is How to Survive Grief, which is really important. Of course, we've got our weekly psychic and mediumship classes. And when you can experience using your soul, you'll realize that you are so much more than meets the eye. I promise you that. Don't forget to come to our Sunday gathering. And then also go see our friends at coasttocoastam.com. Check out the events page. The great George Norrie has some events coming up. Everett, Washington, Sedona, Arizona. There may be more by the time you're looking. So my name is Sandra Champlain. And with a big hug and mega gratitude, thank you for listening to Shades of the Afterlife on the iHeartRadio and Coast to Coast AM Paranormal Podcast Network.
Thanks for listening to the iHeartRadio and Coast to Coast AM Paranormal Podcast Network. Make sure and check out all our shows on the iHeartRadio app or by going to iHeartRadio.com.